Hi, and welcome to episode 350, the holiday. It would be so nice. This is No Crying in Baseball. My name is Patty. I'm here with my friend Potty Mouth. Hi, Potty Mouth.
Hey there. 350.
350.
You know, when I was editing last week and I saw 349, I thought we should do something special for 350, yet here we are. In the same place with the same stuff.
But you know, if you have a good thing going, why change
That's
it?
That's true.
Good yeah, point. No, it's okay. It's okay. And you know, we've been celebrating a holiday all weekend, sort of.
Yeah.
We had our first trip to Camden Yards, and boy, was it cold and rainy, but not on us.
That was sort of cosmic.
Yeah, there were like these, like, you know, gale force warnings and stuff, but it actually, when we were in our seats, it worked in our favor, because on the big board, they were showing, like, everybody who was dancing around was in pouring rain. You know, our intern is texting us saying, aren't you guys getting soaked? It looks like it's really raining. And we're like, no. Yeah, it was just getting blown away from us.
Yeah, there were we could see people, like, scurrying out, you know, for shelter. And so, you know, I guess, I don't know if it just was that day's wind or if in general up high behind home plate is a good place to be, because we are still up high where you would think it would be.
We were a lot closer
windy.
To where the rain's coming from.
Right. But and also, like, our experience at Nats Park up high in the wind was not good, and that was pretty close to behind home. So
yeah, you know what? I think there's more open to the great outdoors in the stands at Nats Park in the upper deck. Also, it's a higher upper deck.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was fun. We got to see Jackson Holliday's home debut, which is completely uneventful. We were very excited because we were going to see Jax. Is it Churio Churio?
I think it's Chaurio.
Chaurio.
So I was excited to see both Jackson. So those, they're two out of three of the Jackson three, right, that are all the rage in MLB today, because they're the three youngins who just happen to share the same name. Jackson Merrill is the third, and he's with the Padres, and he's actually sort of tickled about it's, isn't that cool that we all have the same name? He's doing pretty well. Chaurio and Holiday, unfortunately, neither one did anything when we saw them. And I was, you know, because I have Chaurio on my team, I was more excited to, you know, see him hit. Actually, that's not true. I really wanted to see Jackson Holliday's first hit so much that I made us stay till the very, very bitter end, even though it was late and I had to get up early the next morning.
And it was unlikely he was going to get another at bat. Your optimism just, it was stunned to me, given I knew everything else that was going on. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, well, and it was so close to getting him one more. I mean, it ended out with the batter right before him.
Yeah.
Was the last out. So that was a little heart-wrenching. And seeing Jackson Chaurio strike, he, like, struck out, like, four times.
Four times. It was unreal.
Right. But every other Brewer, it seemed like, was just sailing them. I mean, there was a lot of balls flying in that game.
Yeah.
That was a lot of action, a lot of stuff happening. And actually, we're going to talk about that game a little bit more in our Patreon bonus today.
And a little bit later.
Yeah.
Yep, for sure. Anything else going on you want to say?
I want to thank the Guardians from the bottom of my heart for finally beating the fucking Yankees. The Yankees just refuse to lose. And that's unfortunate for those of us in the AL East, for both of us. So I think especially seeing Cleveland, who lost twice to them yesterday, you know, come back in extra innings today and get them was a very good thing.
Thank you, land of my birth.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, wait, what are we drinking right now? We're almost done with it?
Right now, we are drinking the Haystack Hazy IPA. I believe it is from Lone Oak Brewery in Maryland. And it is our last one in the fridge. We are trying to get through. We're doing our best to get through the beer before the start of Passover, which is in a little over a week. So next week's episode will be my final beers, probably.
And actually, that's the only way I personally observe Passover is I do my darndest to help the potty mouths rid the house of, you know, the things that should be banned.
Much appreciated.
I'm here for you. Always. Yeah. I'm always here for you.
So next week for dinner after recording is going to be beer and bread.
All right. I'm bringing a pillow and a blanket. On today's show, we've got tributes. We've got boyfriends featuring records, firsts, and epic fails. We've got multiple Jacksons. We've got international baseball, and our police blotter features crimes and misdemeanors. Cheers.
Cheers. I feel like we need a Jackson soundtrack here.
Oh my God, can we talk about that for 1 second?
Sure.
So at the game, like during the pregame, we kept like picking out songs like, is this there for a reason? Like they played more than a feeling, like, are you guys trolling Boston because of that? And then they played a Michael Jackson song, and we're like, is that because all the Jacksons are here? But then it wasn't consistent, or I'm too old to notice. But we then started saying, why aren't they playing Madonna holiday, and then you pointed out there's a whole bunch of holiday songs that we have no relationship with because we're old.
Yeah, I had no. Somebody had a poll on Twitter with three holiday songs, and I was like, "Where is the holiday song that like that's that should be Madonna? Why is there any question?" All right. So speaking of the miserable Red Sox, actually things are looking up. So I am not in dead depression right now because the Red Sox did finally manage to win a series at home by beating the Angels today by the skin of their teeth, but they did get swept by the Orioles. So opening day had something for everybody, right? Orioles fans really enjoyed, I'm imagining, beating the Red Sox at Fenway on opening day in a spectacular fashion and did so for the next 2 days. However, I'm going to focus on what happened before the game because for me, that was the much better stuff. And the Red Sox did all the right things for tribute to both Tim Wakefield and Larry Lucchino. And it, you know, all the 2004 idiots, not all of them, but a whole bunch of them came back, you know, clearly not Curt Schilling. Go back to some past episodes for the explanation on that. But I took a little bit of time to learn a little more about Larry Lucchino. And the one thing that stuck out to me about him is I remember him as being responsible for bringing David Ortiz to Boston, which is huge. I mean, I think, you know, Big Poppy has surpassed everybody in love by Boston fans.
For the people in the cheap seats, can you explain who Larry Lucchino is?
So he was the president of the Red Sox for a long time. But what I didn't know is that he had also been president of the O's. So I went back into it and he looked into where he worked before the Red Sox a little bit. So the reason why there's this tribute right now is that he recently died. He died April 2nd, I think. Oh, it was heart failure. I think he was about 78 years old, so definitely younger, and it was an unexpected thing and very hard for Red Sox Nation and, you know, everybody who loved him. But in his early days, so from 79 to 85, he was on the board of directors. He was working for a law firm in D.C., so here in our territory here, and ended up on boards of directors for both the D.C. football team at that point, who was not the Commanders yet, but that team, you know, and the Orioles, and got two rings because he was on those boards. So DC were the champs in 82, and the O's were champs in 83. Then he became the president of the O's from 88 to 93, and was president of Padres from 95 to 01. And notably, during those 10 years is when the new ballparks opened for both places. So did good things, it seems like, wherever he went. And then went to the Red Sox from 2002 to 21, dragged Theo Epstein, famously, who was a youngin' at that time, from the Padres with them, and together they got four rings for the Red Sox. So that means he had six altogether. And there's some stat about him having all these rings from different places. So the tribute to him, in addition to the tribute to both of the Wakefields, Tim Wakefield, who died in October, past, you know, knuckleball pitcher of the Red Sox, was with the 2004 team, although didn't play in the World Series, and his wife, who, you know, tragically followed him in February, and they left two teenage kids. And there were so many just intense, emotional, heart-wrenching moments of the whole thing, but both of his kids went out hoisting the 2004 World Series trophy above their heads. And his daughter, I think this is the part that I am fascinated by. His daughter's the one who threw out the first pitch. So 18-year-old Brianna threw a knuckleball was taught to her by her father. And Jason Veritek caught it. And Veritek on social media somewhere said about how his wife is really stepping up, that they were all very close. And his wife is stepping up and, you know, being there for the kids. But also there were various sources that talked about various of the 2004 idiots who were there who came out and said, you kids now have 17 uncles, for better or for worse. Some of them were like, well, Brianna, when you get on your first date, you've got 17 uncles to, and I'm sure she's beyond first date, but, you know, to worry about. And then the other little video that I saw on Instagram that I'm 99% sure I put in the notes below is Brianna talking to the governor of Massachusetts, Maura Healey, and showing her how to pitch the knuckleball that her dad showed her how to pitch. And it's just lovely to see women doing this, right? Uh-huh. That Massachusetts has a woman who's a governor, and that he did this with his daughter. And just to see the, I hope somebody continues to pitch the knuckleball into the future because it's a beautiful thing. So go back and see videos of that, but a little bit heart-wrenching there. Grab your tissues.
For sure, for sure. We're going to talk to you about what our new boyfriends are up to this week while Potty Mouth pours us more beer. Potty Mouth, what are you pouring us?
So I am pouring Oriole beer in honor of all things Orioles. It's Oriole Park. Shit, what's the brewery? Oriole Park Beer Peabody Heights Brewery. Yes. So this is official Oriole fan beer right here going into the Potty Mouth glasses.
And just so you know, Potty Mouth gave me a very special holiday, as in holly leaves, glass to kind of celebrate this weekend. So thank you for that. Hey, so our boyfriends are these guys that we pick in the off season. We pick one guy per team because there is something special about them. They're good at baseball. They might be, they might have a quirky hobby or a good backstory or some interesting philanthropy or whatever. We like talking about these guys. Bottom line is these are guys we'd like to go out and have a beer with because we find them interesting. So we pick these guys in the off season and now we put them on our fantasy teams. So we're going to report back on how they're doing every week. So I always look at the past week's worth of stats to tell you who I'm going to report on, unless anything like just super crazy happens. So this past 7 days, Lamont Wade Jr. from my San Francisco boyfriend has an OPS of 1.46.
Holy shit.
We take our stats first thing Sunday morning for the Sunday games start. So things can be vastly different now, but as of Sunday morning before Sunday games, he was batting 500, right? It was 7-14 for the week.
Oh my God.
Notably, the Giants had gone 7 games without anybody on their team hitting a home run. And then on Friday night, there were 5 home runs hit on the 11-2 win over Tampa Bay. And that included Lamont Wade Jr.'s first of the season, which was a 2-run homer in the 5th. So that was pretty exciting. So Brett Beatty, of the Mets. His 7-game hitting streak was just over yesterday, but he's hit safely in 11 out of 14 games so far.
We should call him Batty then.
On the season. I'm sure one does. And all of the things I've been reading about him talked about his change in demeanor and personality between last season and this season. Like last season said he was kind of deer in the headlights. Like he had a confidence issue. Like he wasn't sure that he really belonged. Like he was playing in the majors, but he had that whole, you know, imposter syndrome thing going on. And the things I read said things like he's got a sense of belonging. There's a spark of joy about how he's playing right now. He credits Francisco Lindor a little bit in helping to bring that out in him because they're both, you know, left side of the infield. He was talking about improving his footwork at all. And I just had to use this quote because I think this is the funniest quote. I think I'm catching ground balls with my feet right now. And making good, you know, throws and showing the game down, slowing the game down with your feet. I mean, I know what you mean, but okay, that I really want to see.
Yeah.
Friday, he hit a 2-run double versus Kansas City that culminated in a 6-1 win, which ended Kansas City's 7-game winning streak. So, like, you know, a little clutch, but definitely his bat has woken up, his defense is better, and he's playing like he belongs. So that's pretty cool. You may have heard of the Disney Prince, Tyler Glasnow, my Dodgers pitcher. Tuesday versus Minnesota, he pitched 7 scoreless innings. He tied his career high with 14 strikeouts, including 6 straight.
He really is a Disney Prince.
He did all within 88 pitches.
Oh, my God.
He's the only pitcher to strike out 14 with fewer than 90 pitches since they started tracking pitches in 1988. This was his 3rd straight win. Because it was only 88 pitches, a lot of people thought he would come back into the game for the 8th inning. But Robert said there's no need to risk anything, which I thought was smart, right? And he wants to manage recovery time. He said that risk is not worth it to me. I mean, he did his job. So the manager of the Twins, Rocco Baldelli, said, if he's executing pitches the way he did today, he probably beats any team in baseball on any given night. I don't say that lightly. I don't know if I've ever said that about more than 2 or 3 guys that I've really seen in the last few years. So, you know, knocking on all the wood. Can I just stop for a second and say, I saw Michael Elias, the general manager of the O's, interviewed during the game yesterday, and they asked him something where he had to speak positively and verbally. He said, okay, I'm knocking on wood right now, before he said a positive thing. And I thought, oh, you're my people. You're my people. All right. So Zach McKinstry, who's my Detroit boyfriend, this is not good news. Oh. This is ridiculous news, right? So he was a Gold Glove finalist last year. So Saturday versus apparently Minnesota is like the against team for all these things, right? They were in the 12th inning. He's playing third base. Ryan Jeffers on a full count with two outs hits a ground ball to Zach McKinstry at third base. It goes between his legs. Three runs score. Now everyone, both sides say that it was a funny hop. It was a bad hop. But still, how horrible do you feel? Like all of a sudden you give up three. Well, you can still feel worse.
Yep.
You can feel worse because AJ Hinch makes a mistake counting mound visits and took an extra one, so he had to pull his pitcher. So then he had to go to a position player. So he puts in Zach McKinstry, who just, you know, had this horrible error.
Yeah.
So Zach throws a pitch. Well, he ends up walking a batter and then he gives up a three-run home run. So Minnesota ends the game winning 11-5. Six of those runs were completely due to Zach McKinstry from the other team.
Right.
Three-run error and give up a three-run homer.
In that last inning. And I actually saw that Zach McKinstry was sort of like the guy that they were going to go to, period, for if you had to have a position player.
Right,
pitch.
Right, right.
So he was, you know, in the that's what he was going to do when that fuck up happened. But didn't, yeah, it was because of the mound visit.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a Hinch mistake, but the error was not a Hinch mistake. Yep. So there's a lot of things going on right there. Also, 12th inning, it's late in the game.
Oh, my God.
Just say that the eight runs that were scored by the Twins in the extra innings was the most in franchise history since August 1st, 1970. So they've got Zach McKinstry to thank for six of those eight extra inning runs. We talked about Spencer Strider being hurt last week. We have a final call on this. My pick for the Cy Young Award this year is now out for the season, officially. He had internal brace surgery to repair his UCL, which we brought that up. Was that Lucas Giolito had the brace surgery? Somebody we talked about was going to have like internal brace surgery.
Yeah,
and like,
it was Giolito.
And we hadn't heard about that before. Well, now I know a little bit more about it.
Oh, cool.
One of the reasons that they try to use it when they can is the recovery time is a little bit shorter. It's like a 9-month recovery versus like 12 to 18 months for a Tommy John surgery. And the difference is they use like an artificial material to repair the tear as opposed to, you know, how like the Tommy John, they take a tendon from somewhere else. Yes. And they use it to
somewhere else from just another location on the body,
another to be named later, right. A location to be named later to make the repair. But they could only use, I mean, it's most successful when the tear is very close to the bone, but it's much less invasive, which is why the recovery time is so much better. So they talked about this. All this report came in right before Atlanta played the Marlins. So they were talking to everybody about, you may have seen this week, there was so much conversation about pitcher injuries.
Oh, my God.
They were interviewing, pitchers. They were interviewing doctors, like all over the place. Many, like the Washington Post had an article, and all the sports outlets had articles about what the heck is going on. So the Marlins manager weighed in. Skip Schumacher said, we're all trying to figure this out to keep the best players out there. As much as I don't want to see Strider facing us, I want to see him pitch in the major leagues for a long time. We have to figure this out. And it starts down at the youth sports. Honestly, my son's in high school. He's got a kid on his team that's having Tommy John surgery. So it starts down below and the whole baseball community has to figure this thing out. So when the players union says, hey, it's the pitch clock, that might be one of the factors, but the fact that these kids aren't playing with pitch clocks, you know, in youth, in high school, a lot of them in college aren't playing with pitch clocks, and they are having Tommy John surgery. They are having all kinds of injuries because they're thrown faster, more spin, all those things. So the MLB says we're still doing our research. The one they cited last week saying it's not the pitch clock, but they still haven't released the study yet because I think Johns Hopkins is still doing this, performing this study. It could be really any combination of things, and it's bad. It's seriously bad.
Yeah, I do feel like we're a little bit ahead of the ball because that's exactly what we said last week. We were totally talking about the youth and stuff like that. I saw Corbin Burnes, who's just – did you see the interview with him? He is a lovely human being.
He is a lovely human being.
He speaks so well.
He does.
He has nice hair, and he says good things. He is not a fan of the pitch clock. He's kind of – he's on that, like, you know, the MLB Players Association sort of thing. But – he's also, I think, a smart pitcher, and that he has so much awareness of this bodes well for you guys and for him lasting. And the last thing I just saw before recording, that Bobby Miller from the Dodgers is on the IL for a bit, and hopefully it won't be too bad. And that makes me super nervous about Alex Cora's decision today to keep Brian Baio in past 100 pitches. Mm. So he's a baby. I don't know. It made me nervous. Everything worked out okay in the end, but I don't think it was the right decision. And he had to get pulled pretty soon after that. So, but just to send him back out. Ugh. All right, I'm going to follow suit. I'm going to talk about boyfriends of the week who did cool things this past week. And I got to see Ellie De La Cruz in person. This guy is electric. He called himself electric. Like, he is just that hot. And I looked it up. The Reds are not going to Camden Yard, but they are going to be at Nats July 19th to 21st. Is that before you leave?
I will be watching the Smokies play the Trash Pandas that weekend.
Is it that weekend? I thought you were the next weekend.
No, I'm that weekend.
All right. Well, I'm going to find someone to go to Nats Park with me.
We can go to Cincinnati. We've got a place to stay.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Road trip.
And to see him in his like home
park
elements.
We can do this.
So the past four games, he went 8 for 15. That's a 5.33 average with a 1.963 OPS.
I'm sorry, numbers don't go up that high.
Strikeout.
Jeez.
That is so many. I was like, did I write? Maybe I copied that wrong. I don't know. Four stolen bases this week, six total for the season, and four home runs on the season. Now, he did many super cool things this week. Two super cool games. One game, I didn't write it down. I think it was Tuesday. First inside the park home run of MLB season and the first of his career. Oh, Monday. Yeah, I did write it down. On Monday. So inside the park home run against the Brewers, so probably your favorite team right about now, and our friend Sal Frelick, I've been checking out for like future baseball boyfriend stuff. So he pops into the outfield. Sal takes a dive and it just like skims his glove and bounces over him. And Elliot said, like, at that moment, I'm going for it. Like, he made the decision and he just put on the power and he ran 30.1 feet per second. And hit home plate in under 15 seconds. Ran the bases in under 15 seconds.
I think that's fast. You know, I'm not an expert.
I can't get to first base in 15 seconds, I don't think. But I also kind of think that it's like two steps for him to each base. Like, his legs are so long.
They're very long.
That same game, as if that wasn't enough to do, that was fun. He hit a 450-foot home run. Ran the bases much, much slower on that one because he could. But then later, he scored from first base on a bunt. So the man is fast.
What?
And there's a stat for everything. So he's the first player in the StatCast era with both a 450-plus home run and inside the parker in the same game. No shit. He also did the two from different sides of the plate. Plus, Saturday, he hit a 449-foot home run. So not beating that 450-footer, but damn close. So I want to keep my eye on Ellie De La Cruz. I feel a little guilty about taking away from the tall boys on our on our fantasy league. Because, yeah. But he clearly is a tall boy, and I'm sure he'll be on the tall boys next year if the tall boys continue in that direction. Just a couple more guys who did well this week that I was happy about, but super quick. Gabriel Moreno from the D-backs had a really slow start, and I really want him to be my starting catcher. I kind of subbed in Jonah Heim, who's also pretty amazing. But this past Tuesday, he went 4 for 5 against the Rockies, and since then, he's been hitting pretty regularly, and his average is going up. Also, Orlando Arcia, doing wonderful things with the Atlanta team, has had 6 multi-hit games, 4 of them with 3 hits, and is currently batting .360 with over 50 at-bats. So he's been playing a lot, and he's doing well, and definitely has earned his place as a solid shortstop for Atlanta. Speaking of the Atlanta shortstop position, the guy who didn't get that position and then later got traded to my beloved Red Sox and is now my once and forever boyfriend, except for the fact that he's not playing. So he's hanging out on my bench with that NA or whatever it is, or IL for a bazillion games. But I'm hopeful because he has made it to AAA. He is in Worcester. He started as DH, I believe, on Friday and did not hit. And it doesn't look like he played yesterday. But Alex Cora said he needs to play 2 days back-to-back while playing an infield position. I'm wondering if they're going to put him at second or short because Trevor Story being out. So we will see. the cute quote that I saw for him from him is when there was all this hype about Jackson Holliday debuting at Fenway, they talked to Vaughn Grissom because he was another player who was on another team who made his debut at Fenway and famously hit a home run and stole a base and is the only debut player to have done so. So he said, and I quote, "I was going to tell him, if you hit a home run, don't fucking steal because that record's mine."
I like it.
So, you know, unfortunately that didn't, well, I don't know. They did plenty fine, the Orioles, without Jackson Holliday hitting a home run. But, you know, great things are going to come to him soon. I started taking notes a couple days ago when I noticed that Spencer Turnbull was doing well. I added him to my rotation because I've had a little bit of injury issue, and I remembered that we can have a bench player on pitching. And so I wanted to play with that a little bit. So I added Spencer Turnbull because his ERA was zero after 11 innings pitched, and I jinxed it. So yesterday when I went to check on
all the power, right, we have so much power.
I checked to see how he did on his outing yesterday, and he gave up 3 runs and 4 hits in 3+ innings. Not horrible. It was a single and then a two-run home run to O'Neill Cruz. So he's still sitting at a 1.80 ERA, which is not shabby, but I feel partly responsible for that. So I'm very sorry, Spencer Turnbull. I started my notes too early. I also thought that my fantasy team was not doing well because my closers were not closing well. And so I looked into it a little bit. Jose Alvarado with the Phillies, the first thing I opened up with from him said, quote, 4 scoreless appearances since his 5-run meltdown to open the season. So oops. But these past 2 weeks, he hasn't let up any runs and has had 2 saves on 8 innings pitched. So I'm feeling like, hopefully my pitching stats are going to increase. Sort of a similar thing with Andrés Muñoz of Seattle. He has lots of love on Yahoo Fantasy, 96% rostered, despite the fact that he had a really shaky start. And there was talk of him missing his closing opportunities to Ryan Stanek if he didn't get his act in gear. Well, this past week, he got his act in gear. He got out of a bases-loaded jam on Tuesday, got his first win on Wednesday by escaping an inherited 2 runners on base jam and helped the Mariners win that one in extras. So he was the winning pitcher on record. So he came into this week at 4.91 ERA, and now he's down to 3. And importantly, he's got the quality hair above replacement going for him. So
very nice, for sure.
Positive. I'm hoping my closers are now, you know, settled in and we'll be closing it out for Potty Mouth Posse.
All right. So we've already mentioned Jackson Holliday 47 times, and I'm going to try to talk about his debut using stories that you may not have seen, not just, oh, his dad, or he's only 20, or he said he wanted to do this in 2 years and he did. Okay, we all know all those things if you are paying any attention whatsoever. So here's a story about his number. Okay, so you know that he's wearing number 7 because his dad is number 7. And you may know that 7 is Cal Ripken Sr.'s number that he wore when he managed the Orioles. And the only other person to wear that since was his son, Billy. Oh. And that was the only other. And they've not retired that number, but everyone has just treated that as kind of a sacred number. So when Jackson initially got the call up, they were going to give him number 1 because number 1's available, number 1 draft choice, why not? And then they thought, well, he's going to want number 7 for his dad, and then the O said, you know what? It's worth asking. Do you want this number? Do you want to like investigate? Can you get this number 7? And Jackson was apparently a little shy, a little unsure about asking for it, because he grew up in Major League Baseball. Yeah. He knows the importance of the symbols and all of those things. And the Orioles official says, well, you can, if you're not sure, why don't you just call Cal Ripken Jr.? Like, who wouldn't? And he said, I would, but it's 11 o'clock at night. It's late. Which
that's,
I thought,
respectful.
Cal is 63. So, I mean, as a 60, almost 60-year-old, you know, I don't want phone calls.
Neither.
At that hour. But you know who's okay to call him? Fred Tyler, who is a clubhouse attendant and has been an Orioles clubhouse attendant for decades and knows all the Ripkens. So first thing the next morning, the day of the debut, he calls Cal. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why not? And of course, the phone is answered and he says, hey, this is like junior high when you have your friend find out if that guy likes you.
Right.
Because you don't want to ask them yourself. So Fred asks Cal Ripken Jr., there's this conversation. How would you feel mm-hmm. about this? Are you open to this? And apparently Cal said, I think this is great. Let me check. And he talked to his brother to make sure. And then they said, hey, Fred, we think it's okay. Have the kid call me.
That's, wow. Have the kid call
me. And then the kid called him.
Have the kid call me.
Pass the phone number to the kid, right? And Cal reported later that Jackson was like so overly respectful that like he had to carry the conversation. Like he knew why he was calling, right? And he had to kind of help him through because the kid's 20 and he's talking to this freaking legend. I mean, you think he grows up with a legend, so that should be okay. But it's not the same legend. It's not your dad, the legend. It's that other guy, the legend. Right. And, you know, so Cal like said, yes, absolutely. You can use this number. And later he said, you know, this is cool because now people are talking about my dad again. Because this is part of the conversation. So that's really cool. And he asked, Jackson, are you in the lineup today? And he said, yeah, I'm batting ninth. And Cal said, not for long. Aww. Which was very, very sweet. So separate good story is Tony Kemp was an Oriole for like 2 weeks. He played 5 games for the Orioles. He is the one who got DFA'd to make room for Jackson Holliday, which, you know, kind of sucks for Tony Kemp. But he's a veteran. Yeah. And he gets it. And he had the most lovely message about that, which he posted. He said, in the fall of 2010, our college had a series against the Longhorns for a 3-game set. Our hitting coach at the time was Josh Holliday, and his brother Matt brought his kid to our early practice. I remember watching his son, Jackson Holliday, with a sweet lefty swing. Go get him, kid. Aww. And, you know, there's crying in baseball, right? I mean, like, this is so classy. It's such a nice move, and it's so supportive, and it was just the right thing. The other thing that I thought was really sweet. So when we went on Friday, we got the debut t-shirts. Thank you for picking one up for our intern. His teammates wore that debut shirt during warmups to show their support for him. It's a nice shirt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like he didn't wear it. Thank you, Felix. That would not have been cool. Mm-hmm. But all of his teammates were like, yeah, we're here to support you. This is cool. This is a great thing. And he did get his first hit today.
Yay.
Yay. This is Sunday. He got his first hit. But it had been, you know, he started Wednesday. So there's a lot of games where he did. And he was like 0 for 12. He's got on base a few times, but no actual hits. But Cal Ripken said, yeah, I remember going 3 for my first 32. So, you know. And if you remember last year, I was lamenting Gunnar Henderson. I was like, oh my God, I have all my hopes on Gunnar. And he has this slump. And I'm worried he's too much in his head and all of that. And then he wins Rookie of the Year. So I'm hoping that it's a similar sort of situation where he just had to work things out.
Right.
I saw they zoomed in on Jackson Holliday on third base. And he had a grin on his face like, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for the best. But he's going to be fun to watch, hopefully, for a long time.
He seemed pretty well. I know that on his debut at Fenway, he was turning double plays like a pro.
Yeah, like his glove was there the whole time. It's just that his bat was not kicking in yet.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. It's time for your international roundup. Super quick, CPBL, Taiwanese baseball. I just want to gloat for a moment because my beloved Lions are on top, so I'm going to say it while it exists. By 3 over the brothers at the time of recording. Part of that is thanks to my baseball boyfriend. I'm only to pick one and one forever for CPBL at this point, at least until he stops playing, which is Lin Anko. And he had a walk-off grand slam on Friday over the TSG Hawks. Right before recording, I was trying to buy my subscription for the year, and I'm having some issues deciding on my plan. I might go on a Lions-only plan because the whole thing, it's a little pricey, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm excited.
So no faking your phone number?
Well, that's exactly, I mean, I'm going to have to do that regardless of what I buy. But
oh, right. Even to pay.
Yeah.
All right.
But I'm going to figure out something. But it might be just Lions, all the time. Rawr.
Wow.
Last week I talked about the Venezuelan Women's Championship, and on Friday it was an extended series. On Friday, Lara won over on Swategi. You know, even though Lara won and Lara is my choice for the LVPP, and Swategi shirts were fire. Like, right? Literally, they looked fiery, and it says on Swategi, I don't know, I'm feeling a little
tempting.
Like, I want to get that shirt. Well, Lara won for the third consecutive year. MVP of the game was Frandelis Garcia, who went 7 innings with 1 run. And Lara only lost 1 game in the whole tournament previously to Anzuategui, and they managed to beat him for the champs. Notably, the umpire squad was 6 women who were umping the whole competition. And they talked about this being a sort of team forming for the Thunder Bay Women's Series. This is the International Women's Baseball. This can be happening in July in Thunder Bay, Ontario, from July 28th to August 3rd. And the six teams who are in there for the champ is Canada, U.S., Mexico, Japan, Taiwan, and Venezuela. So we'll see how they do. Just a little by the way, the president of the Federation of Venezuelan Baseball, so this is all of Venezuelan baseball, is a woman. Her name is Aracelis León. She is also the president of the World Baseball and Softball Confederation Americas and the vice president of the overall World Baseball and Softball Federation. Oh. These are not women's organizations, none of them. The WBSC governs all international competitions involving official national teams. And just quick, speaking of women's baseball, we are in Jackie Robinson weekend. And as usual, it's so nice to say as usual, Trailblazer Series with girls here in the United States is happening right now as we speak at the Jackie Robinson Complex in Vero Beach, Florida. So nice. Power to them. And hopefully we too can have national championship some year.
Wouldn't that be great? Hey, police blotter, things are happening. You may remember Julio Urias, who used to pitch for the Dodgers. You may have heard of them. He's been on administrative leave for since last September. Mm-hmm. The city of LA district attorney's office just laid out five misdemeanors on him. One count of spousal battery, two counts of domestic battery involving a dating relationship. That is a long descriptor for a crime, for a misdemeanor. One count of false imprisonment and one count of assault. So initially the county had this case and they evaluated and they said that based on the history of the person, the perpetrator, the extent of the injuries, which apparently was not intense. They went through their list and said these don't qualify as felonies. So they bounced it to the city to look at them as misdemeanors. And then the city said, yep, we got five of them. So five misdemeanors. The arraignment is on May 2nd. He remains on administrative leave. If he ever comes out of that, he will be a free agent because right now he does not have a home. Is his situation.
The misdemeanor part is weird to me, though, because this is his second offense with MLB, right? And misdemeanors, I mean, I don't know if it, I got to ask the lawyer in the other room, but I believe it's under a year and under a certain amount of money. Like, there's very little jail time involved in misdemeanors, if at all.
Oh, I'm sure.
So that super sucks. Well, I thought that was the lawyer entering the room.
Oh, I thought that tech support was coming in to provide legal support, right? Right.
No, I believe that that's just not a lot.
So our other police blotter information is about Ipe Mizuhara, who is the interpreter from Shohei Ohtani. He has been officially charged by the feds with bank fraud, allegedly stealing $16 million from Shohei Ohtani to cover his gambling debt. $16 million.
I'm guessing that is not a misdemeanor. I'm guessing that is
bank fraud charge. That might be up to 30 years in prison if he is found
big old felony
guilty. So MLB, who was separately investigating, put their investigation on hold for a couple of good reasons. They said according to that investigation, which is like the federal is an IRS investigation, Shohei Ohtani is considered a victim of fraud, and there's no evidence that he authorized betting with an illegal bookmaker. So they pulled. So the player is no longer part of the equation. Wow. And the investigation did not find any betting on baseball by Mr. Mizuhara. So those are the things that MLB would have, the policies that Major League Baseball has concern betting on baseball and, you know, things that the players are involved in. So this doesn't count for either of them. So they're putting it on hold until the federal investigation is done to see if there really is anything that requires follow up. But they don't think so. They think the feds have got this. The IRS agent said they going through, you know, a bazillion text messages and other documents, and they do not find it credible that Ohtani knew of Mizuhara's debts. All now, right. Here's so you think, how can $16 million go missing and nobody notice? So this is where language has a serious effect on this. So his interpreter wasn't just for ball games.
Right.
He got between Ohtani and his agent and between Ohtani and his financial advisors. Sure. So he had this power. He was, you know, he was abusing his position, apparently, allegedly, to prevent the financial advisors and from the agent communicating directly to Otani in a language that they share, which apparently they do not, and was able to hide these things because he was throwing up these barriers and was controlling lines of communication. And this is a big deal. Yeah. Otani apparently is, you know, now like in the clear, at least for now. Like, he was not involved. He got $16 million involved, but not of his authorization or knowledge or any of those things. So that's the good news. But $16 million.
But somebody who's making $700, right, just on baseball and then like lots of other stuff. So I'm guessing the interpreter figured, you know, what's $16 million for a guy who's got hundreds of millions of dollars to him?
At what point he was in debt $41 million to this illegal bookie.
God.
It says he made bets of $180 million. So how is that something anyone can do?
No, it's just fucking mind-blowing. Like, I just don't understand how somebody can gamble to that extent. I mean, I guess it's an illness, and if you have access to that kind of stuff, and I wish I remembered who it was, but somebody else who had an interpreter in MLB basically said, like, yeah, I mean, you're in a new country. You need this person to do things like set up your bank accounts. Like, they're doing all of these errandy kind of things for you, and you just trust them. And they had a long relationship.
Years.
I think it does, you know, we've been talking about people who have been doubting Otani in these past weeks about his involvement and is he really, you know, involved or not. But I think this seems pretty clear that he just trusted somebody had known for a long time, and this guy really fucked up.
Yeah, he sure did. So my betting is really when a relative hands me a scratch-off lottery ticket, and every once in a while, a bingo opportunity comes up that I just can't resist.
Yeah,
and that's really the extent of it. So when I was little, we used to go to like horse races, and it was like, here, here's $2, you know, and that's it. And
Although the huge irony of, like, you know, this presented to you by DraftKings all over MLB
is kind by it,
of
like,
you know, well, you know, what kind of
it's normalizing it for sure.
Are you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what nobody bets on? Our fantasy league. If they do bet on it, we don't know about it. And that's how I like it.
Yeah.
I don't want to know about
that. It's interesting how things are starting to flesh out. We've got our kind of like experts floating to the top, huh?
Well, again, this was this little snapshot was taken before the games today. And if you look at the live standings, they are different now than they were then. But as of this morning, which is our apples to apples comparison, is Karen's Crew, number one, Bono's Boyfriends coming back, number two, the Tall Boys tied with Bono's Bono's Boyfriends, right, number two. Then the Sunny Slammers. Then me at five. Then you at six. Wicked Awesome Team down to seven. Han Soto, that was an excellent rename. I ever like it. Number eight, Bring Back Riddell at nine. And the Kids at 10, because we're not sure they actually filled out the rest of their lineup or not. But that's not our responsibility.
Right.
Once the season starts, you all are on your own. Right. I can only, you know, do punitive damages. I don't control your rosters other than
that. Hey, kids, put in your pitchers.
Yeah, or something.
But yeah, the Han Soto, I'm impressed. Like, that is definitely a late coming and shooting up there. And I'm feeling a little, you know, good about my pitching adjustments. So maybe that'll keep me in check just a little bit. Although I just saw that I played a player who's not playing.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
That happens because games start at different times and you only, you know, it's not like we don't have other things to do.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, I know. Hey, one of our other things to do is to cross train tomorrow. What are we doing tomorrow night?
Hey, we're going to watch that springtime sport of hockey at Capital. When it's the Capital Arena part is not Capital.
I always just say we're going to the arena.
Yeah, we're going to watch play the Bruins, who have been sliding a little bit lately, but I'm really, really hopeful because I want some Bruins championship gear, but we will see if the Caps are a thorn in the Bruins' side.
I'm hoping.
And there's all sorts of celebrations going on. There's like a pregame block party and a teenage-style poster giveaway.
It's a culmination of Fan Appreciation Week. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're late in the hockey season. There can't be too much more.
I went to a game at Thanksgiving. Our intern and I always go to a Thanksgiving weekend game.
Which is much more hockey.
But this is only my second hockey game, and usually I do three or four a season, so I feel like I'm slacking.
My only hockey shirt is long sleeved, and it's supposed to be like 80.
Not in the arena where there is ice.
Right.
Your long sleeve shirt will be just fine inside.
All right. I'll be wearing my Bruins shirt and sticking out like a sore thumb, but it's gonna be fun.
There'll be more. It's always more of you people. You Boston people are everywhere.
That's true. Oh my God, the Celtics game was nuts. See? I don't anticipate being quite that big, but I do have like really high hopes for a Celtics championship shirt. They're just cranking. So,
and by high hopes, you mean Potty Mouth's dad likes to buy the championship shirts, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, and I may or may not have been like scoping out a Jrue Holiday with two L's. Wait, who has the L's?
Jackson's got all the L's.
Jackson has the L. Jrue has just one L. Yep. L's to you.
We're going to have an L of a good time. That's all I'm saying.
All you win.
We're going to go see some hockey. Yeah. All right, my friends, if you have things to report about the people that you're following that you want us to talk about, did we miss a story? Did we get a story wrong? Please let us know. We love to get the corrections to the corrections department, which is where, Potty Mouth?
Absolutely. You can find us on Blue Sky and X at NCIB Podcast, Facebook and Instagram, and No Crying and B-Ball. Join the fun on Patreon. Please do. We're about to record our Patreon bonus. That's patreon.com/nocryingbball. $1 a month or more if you want us to say something that you want us to say on air. That costs just a teeny bit more. But, you know, go to Patreon, check it out. It will be worth your while.
Sure enough, my friends. So please get your booster, fight the man. It's the right thing to do. Send your game balls to Meredith. And until next week, say goodnight, Potty Mouth.
Good night, Potty Mouth.
I mean, it's only been 350 episodes. I mean, we'll figure some things out.
Like, you know, there's wild cards, like changing the equipment after.
Yeah, there's more wild cards every time.
That's true. It's a thing. It is a thing. All right, I need more beer.
Wait, what?